Welcome to the Butts the Seats podcast, episode number 137.
Feels like years.
It's too many episodes.
Too many. We should be done, I think.
We now have plans to go to episode 200, so.
Woo! We ain't done yet, baby.
I'm Nick, alongside Emily.
Hello.
Emily, what is it we do here most of the time?
Most of the time, we take a week-by-week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and early 2000s.
And what did we do last time?
Got into an argument because my attitude was real shit on the podcast.
Yeah.
Last week, I was not doing well with this show, and I was having, if you guys follow us on the Patreon, you'll know, I had a pretty bad a bad go of it when we watched ECW December to Dismember, where it's just kind of like, what's the point of doing this? What's the point of being here? That's kind of where I was in the last episode of this podcast, when we were back in Australia. I apologize for my sour puss attitude.
You're more constructive about it, but you also did have one of those moments with the latest Patreon episode of Lex Express of the uh-oh.
Oh, see, now I can, like, joke about it, though, because, yes, the most recent episode over on our Patreon, the Lex Express choo-choo motherfuckers, was also kind of a yikes. Not as bad, though. Yeah. I knew the silliness going into Lex Express. I don't think I really understood how bad December to Dismember was, and that's why I spiraled. I also didn't realize how bad Australia was going to be.
Yeah. As a pitch for that, I will let you know now that over the Patreon, Emily did not know that Lex did not win at the end of the Lex Express arc. I mean, I guess technically he wins, but not really.
He doesn't, though.
Yeah.
He doesn't win the title, and that's the whole point of doing the bus season. The whole reason we watched him on a bus, null and void, doesn't matter.
Hey, well, up next you get to do Vince Russo's book.
Let's go.
But Emily, we are back in America doing a normal Nitro, and in reality, I think part of the reason you're a little more cheery is this wasn't the worst show.
I never thought that I would say, thank God we're back in the States. Never thought I'd say that.
Thank God we're in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah. Man, but this episode had such a different feel, such a different energy. Like, it's I don't want to say night and day, but it's close from the last two episodes that we've watched.
Yeah, it felt like they were on vacation the last 2 weeks, and now...
Yeah, I think that they were really like that. They were only doing shows in Australia for tax write-offs or something, but they were just over there because they wanted to fuck around in Australia. Can't blame them, but...
Well,
God,
we talked about
it.
Like, they had the potential to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. They just fucked up their own deal.
They didn't, yeah. They're just stupid. Because they just wanted to go to Australia. Can't wait to see how England goes.
Again, the Australia deal would have been good money if they didn't fuck themselves. It wasn't we want to go here. It's like, no, like, there is a business reason to go. They just then fucked that up.
Yeah. They're not smart people.
Well, today we're here to talk about the October 23rd, 2000 WCW Monday Nitro, the go-home show for Halloween Havoc 2000.
They will tell us multiple times over that we are 6 days out from Halloween Havoc.
As a reminder, when we get to Halloween Havoc, that means we have been in the timeline for 2 years.
That's insane.
It's taken us 5 years to go through 2 years.
Jesus. Thanks for sticking it out with us, fans. Yeah.
At least we have pretty well stuck to our bi-weekly release.
Yeah, we have.
This show did a 2.2 down from a 2.3 last week
that's
to
not
Raw's
that much of a
5.5.
That, you know, that's pretty standard, I feel, at this point.
Yeah. It's not good. It's just
not
standard.
Good. No, it is absolutely run-of-the-mill, like what you expect.
This is the lowest it's been in a while.
I feel like you're going to say that every week now.
Yeah, that's the problem. Emily, I have some backstage notes for this show.
Okay.
The first one of which is mentioned like right before the main event of the show, but let's acknowledge it here. In the past week, Yokozuna passed away at the age of 34.
Yeah.
Which we were talking about the Lex Express. How young he is there.
I don't think I realized how timely that was for us personally, his death and watching the Lex Express.
Yeah, completely unintentional.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually kind of shocked to hear that. But 34, like, I know he's a big guy, but he must have been making some, like, other poor life decisions.
It's just his weight and his health
That was all, like...
I mean, he...
34 is so young.
There's stories of him, and I think it was Vader, getting sent to, like, fat camp and sneaking out to go, like, eat buckets of KFC and...
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Apparently, he had, like, an open contract for, like, get down to this weight, and we will literally sign you tomorrow from WWF. Yeah.
And he just couldn't do it.
Nope, and it's been noted plenty, but, like, at this time, Rikishi is such a big deal. It's like, that's your spot. Rikishi literally has your spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think canonically his last, like, national match, unfortunately, probably is Heroes of Wrestling.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, it's been about a year, but he has been nowhere since.
Yeah. And
it's noted that, like, oh, he died in England. It's like, oh, yeah, I know getting his body back apparently was a
massive
problem because the dude's well over 600 pounds at this point, and it's like,
Was he really that big?
Yeah.
I don't think I realized he was over 600. I thought that was just like the WWF of like...
It's a mix of massive. Both. I mean, okay. He was massive, but then towards the end of his life, when you have health issues for being so big, it's like, yeah, it's because you ballooned.
Mm, okay. I guess that makes more sense.
Yeah. He was not in good health. An attempt to wrap it all up with Yokozuna because we never saw him in our show. So, no. Yeah. But like, it is... fortunate that he's part of the NOI family that, like, all right, cool. He, like, his legacy is a little more preserved than some others. Kind of funny. We were watching the 2003 Royal Rumble the other night, and Roman Reigns' brother, Rosie, popped up, and you're like, oh, he's part of the family. And I'm like, yes, that's Roman's brother.
I was barely aware that Rosie was a wrestler, but he came down the ramp. I was like, oh, that's an NOI. That man's in the bloodline.
You know what's funny? I'm kind of surprised. We wouldn't have seen any of them, but I'm kind of surprised you're not aware of Rosie. Because Rosie's gimmick, either following or preceding 3-Minute Warning, is he is the Hurricane sidekick.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized that the Hurricane had a sidekick.
Yes. Well, aside from Mighty Molly, but...
Yeah, that's the only sidekick I knew.
No, he had Rosie for a little while.
What was Rosie's thing?
He
wasn't a superhero?
He was. I just don't know enough about the gimmick.
Mm.
But we will acknowledge Yoko's passing on the broadcast at the most inappropriate accidental moment.
It's honestly hilarious.
In more down news, Bret Hart was officially fired.
Oh.
Yep. Per Hart's contract, if he was unable to wrestle for more than 90 days, they had the right to terminate the deal, and they did.
They cashed in on that.
Yep. They were like, nope, sorry, you can't wrestle, so we don't have to pay anymore. You're fired.
Damn.
A little preview for Halloween Havoc. For the backstage
notes.
He
comes back, doesn't he?
No. He writes like a little farewell article in the Calgary Sun.
Oh.
And like the sign off, I'm like, God damn it, Brett. Oh, so remember how you were noting like, oh, well, like 2.2, that's pretty standard.
Yeah.
The first hour of Nitro was the second lowest rated unopposed hour ever.
Damn.
For, I guess, you know, these. Well, the second hour was the lowest rated second hour in the history of the show.
Damn.
So... it's not going great.
But you're telling me that the Perfect Event versus the Harris Buddies didn't garner the highest of ratings?
ACW's December pay-per-view, aka Massacre on 34th Street, is already sold out 2 months in advance.
Like, wow.
It's only 2,500 tickets, so it's not a massive...
Okay, so it sounds better than it actually is in practice.
A bit of a clerical work here, and we'll note this a little as we go. On the last Nitro, Goldberg left the show at 7-0.
Mm-hmm.
On Thunder, he was suddenly 10-0.
Okay.
Thunder was taped beforehand, and there were no other shows, apparently.
He just powerbombed 3 random guys in the parking lot. I was like, that's 3!
This show was apparently the first of the, like, joint tapings, where they're gonna do Nitro and then Thunder.
Oh.
Which I noted on this show, because they just do the Thunder set and have the blue ropes, and I went, why is Thunder winning this battle?
Right? I guess Thunder's just an easier set.
And my last one for now, just if you're curious who is actually writing the show right now.
Yeah.
Because Russo's gone. However, we do see a glimpse of him in a video package. Just like a
we get the Popemobile, baby.
So it's Terry Taylor, Bill Banks, and Ed Ferrara, apparently the main guys writing television. Which to me just screams, we don't have a plan.
I mean, well, Ed Ferrara, he's been a writer for the show before.
Yeah, but he's Russo's buddy.
Yeah.
I don't believe Oklahoma comes back, so we're
Thank
safe there.
God.
That's all for the backstage notes. Let's get into what I think is going to be a very brief weather report, where there's always thunder. Yeah, this was a very skippable Thunder.
Yeah.
Again, partially because it got taped before the last Nitro, so they can only have so much continuity.
Right. Honestly, though, Thunder has kind of started feeling, like, non-canonical anyway, where it's literally, it's just like a spin-off. You know, so, we're watching Ted Lasso now. I know in our last episode we talked about how I hadn't watched Ted Lasso yet. We're watching Ted Lasso now.
We're almost done with Ted Lasso.
We slammed
it. We may be done by the time this episode comes out.
We should be. But there's the Christmas episode in Ted Lasso where it's like, it could stand on its own. It doesn't really need the continuity of the series, minus that one line. I feel like Thunder's kind of becoming that. Where it doesn't really rely on the storylines and continuity of Nitro.
See, I think it's more the, like, Star Wars comics, where it's like, you didn't know the Emperor had, like, done all this shit on Exegol that the movies don't talk about?
It's okay, like, yeah. But no. Is anything that important happening?
Well, here's the thing. It's not actually important. It's just lore.
But is any lore being established on Thunder?
Well, you'll have to see, because there's going to be a battle royal in the main event.
That's lore building!
It is the countdown to Armageddon, which I'm like, that's a WWE pay-per-view. Maybe don't highlight.
Wait, when is Armageddon?
It's December, but...
Wait, why are we counting down to Armageddon?
I don't even know why they did it in this show, but...
Are they counting down to a show, or are they just using the word Armageddon as, like,
they're using the phrase countdown and Armageddon as just words.
Oh my god, I hated you.
So it is going to be a, they just say a battle royal. That's all I say. We'll get into that in a second. The winner gets a title shot the night after Halloween Havoc.
Mm-hmm.
And they note that both Booker T and Scott Steiner are going to be in the battle royal, which prompts conversation of, well, what happens if they win and they win the title?
Let's hope that doesn't happen.
I literally have, like, nothing for any of the matches. Scott Steiner tells Pamela he's having a battle royal of love in his Caligula suite.
In his Caligula suite?
Room 606, which I'm like, is that meant to be a thing?
I don't know.
But Goldberg squashes Elix Skipper to go to 11-0. Sam Greco says he's going to bring intensity to the table. And he says that, like, five times.
Sam Greco's little... here?
Yeah, the guy, the Australian guy.
I know the guy, but he's in Thunder?
He's still here.
Oh, jeez.
And I don't think we see him again.
Okay.
We get Mark Madden interviewing Ric Flair, and the most upsetting part about this was Rick does a mean woo by God Gene, but he does like a Mark...
Mark woo by God Madden?
Yeah.
Fuck that.
I didn't like it.
Do not splice that in. I don't even want to hear it.
Says he came to Australia to sleep with a bunch of women.
Did he?
I don't know. He kept being like, you there, the front row. Yeah, you. Like,
yikes.
Well, the other reason is to bring his son home. And I'm like, isn't this canonically the, like, final show in Australia? Like, why do you need to... He's coming home.
He'll be home next week.
David comes...
staying in Australia.
So David comes out in, like, a big white coat, but, like, not, like, a straitjacket kind of thing. Just, like, a big lab coat kind of vibe. It's weird and bad. I don't really know what the hell's going on. But to add to the weird vibe of, oh, I don't like this, Rick calls David Little Nate, and I'm like,
oh, no.
How dare you?
Fuck, no, absolutely not.
Little Nate died when John Cena collided with him at the last interview.
Oh, my God. That was iconic, though. That was a fantastic move.
I think he did tweet, I'm alive.
Bless him.
So this segment ends with David Flair attacking Mark Madden and trying to steal his blood.
Not again.
Yeah.
Not again.
We then end the show with the countdown to Armageddon Battle Royal.
Again, Armageddon's not a show, time, or place.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is a 30-man Royal Rumble, and they have 15 minutes to do this.
Jesus.
There are no graphics. You just get Dave Penzer every 30 seconds going.
Or so. We don't know.
Yeah. 5, 4, and like... Music hits, I swear not everyone's music is right.
No, probably not, because who's keeping track? But he also doesn't just start counting down. He goes, matches continuing in 5. Like,
the next entrant and...
No, he said matches continuing. Oh. I watched this with Nick.
Yeah. Well, I went back to show this. Commentary also doesn't have the list of who's in the match or who's what number. Because they're like, well, is the last entrant? Maybe.
They don't even know how many entrants there are, how many have come in.
To add to it, two different teams like come out at the same time. And
oh,
I'm like,
God.
So are you both in the match?
And
or
Jeff
no?
Jarrett comes out with Scott Steiner.
Well, Jarrett's music hits.
Oh.
Steiner's doesn't. Jesus Steiner Christ. Comes out. And yeah, it also, it's weirdly mid-loaded where it's like entrants like 10 through 20 are all the main event stars. And then 1 through 10 are all jobbers, and 20 through 30 are all also kind of jobbers. And with the entrance, the order is so fixed of, like, teams coming out around each other that Stevie Ray is actively calling it out.
Yes, if Stevie Ray is calling it out, you know you've done bad. That means he's actually paying attention.
Yeah, and because it's pre-recorded, we finally get, like, hey, Kevin Nash is going to come out. Something's going to happen. Oh, we have to go to break. Stevie Ray, not now, Tony.
But then they come back from commercial and nothing has changed. 6 seconds have passed.
He's in the ring, and then he just eliminates everybody, basically. All the main eventers get eliminated in the middle with, like, almost no fanfare.
No.
And the match is won by Mike Awesome when he's, like, outnumbered 4-1, but Goldberg comes out and helps him win.
Cool.
And Goldberg could not have been in this match because of the stipulation of he can't get a title match until...
Oh, I thought there was just going to be because reasons. I didn't realize.
Well, they, like... Do a thing if they take out Goldberg. It's like, oh, he's not in the match. It's like, well, no, he can't be in the match because of the weird stipulation. And then he just shows up in the main event and helps Mike Awesome win. So next week, we're going to get a Mike Awesome title match.
Okay. I hope that Crowbar is part of it.
I don't know.
I have turned around on this gimmick for Crowbar. I don't think it's a burial. I think that he is rising to the occasion. I think he's doing a great job with it. Crowbar can do no wrong.
We were discussing the other day, has Crowbar... surpassed Billy as your bottom boy.
I don't like ranking. I just like having everybody be my favorites.
Well, Emily, do you want to get into the main show with some of your favorites?
That sigh was out of place because this show is not bad.
It's not good. It's not a good go-home show, no, but as an episode of Nitro, it's not the worst.
No, it's entirely fine.
We open with just like a full Australia recap, like for both shows. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why?
I don't want to see this again.
But, like, you just assume, oh, they're in some other country. I ain't watching.
That's a weird level of patriotism.
We then get the lengthy Nitro opening. I mean, the opening pyro, it's like the same set as the Australia thing where, like, it's just thunder down to it has the blue ropes. And I'm like, why?
I really do genuinely think that it's just a simpler set and it's they're cutting costs, you know?
Well, I get the set, but, like, the ropes?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
The ropes, I don't know.
Our commentary team for one last time for a little bit is Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Stevie Ray.
Why is Stevie Ray here?
I don't know. So I told you before, I managed to find a list of, like, all right, who does what on each shows. And it's hidden in the most stupid parts of the internet. Because... it's not on Wikipedia. It is on the simple English version of Wikipedia.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but just... it's like, oh yeah, you want to have this chart that's deleted from the other ones. Here it is here. So we are going to get Stevie Ray two more times. Once in November, once in December, and then he's gone.
That's soon, though. Yeah. I don't want any more Stevie Ray. He's just, like... and at least in this show, in this episode, he's not as oblivious. He's not great, but he's not like, I don't know what's going on. But he's not good. He's not adding enough to offset that.
It's because he's been on every show. He's like, all right, well, he knows what's going on because he's contractually paid to watch them.
Jesus.
Our first thing of the night is a match. It's the perfect event with Kevin Nash versus the Harris Brothers. Weird opening to the show.
It is a weird opening because then, like, the perfect event has this weird beef going on.
It's like, who do I root for?
I'm not rooting for the Nazis.
Yeah, I don't want to root for the perfect event either. That's the problem. This is what I used to talk about when I'm like, oh, it's heel versus heel because no one is likable.
No, but if you like, I still don't think that this is a problem with this match. I think this was just two bad teams that are bad at wrestling because I think that you can still do heel versus heel and make it semi-interesting.
Not necessarily things wrong with this match, but wrong with, you know, the night and the company. Kevin Nash is allowed to come out wearing a Scott Hall shirt.
Oh my god, yeah, I did actually notice that. It's the Last Call Hall shirt with the... I feel like this is such a poor taste shirt.
Yeah.
It's got like an olive on a pick on the front, and then there's something on the back too, alcohol related.
I think it's like a martini glass at some point. Maybe. Yeah.
It's just a little tasteless. I guess maybe they don't know how bad it is at the time, but
well,
I don't know.
I think the shirt was made before it got even worse.
Yeah, maybe.
Match starts. Stasiak hits a neck breaker as Nash calls him an idiot on commentary. Heavy D lights up Stasiak, so he tags in Palumbo, who managed to hit a super kick.
I will also say that on commentary, Kevin Nash not only calls him an idiot, he mentions that Nash himself is in a bad mood today. He's grumpy. Don't mess with him today.
Well, I have two more commentary notes here because Stevie Ray says Chuck Palumbo reminds him of a first-round All-American.
Oh.
I don't know why Stevie Ray is so infatuated with Chuck Palumbo, but we noted this last week.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I don't really know what first-round All-American means. Is that like an athlete?
Yes. So being an All-American is like a collegiate thing for like kind of like how there's like an all-star team in most sports.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a version of that.
Okay.
And like first round, just like you get drafted in the first round of whatever sport you're in.
So yeah, he's really, really good at wrestling.
Yes.
What Stevie Ray is trying to say.
Well, last week, Stevie Ray is like, he's one of the 10 best wrestlers in WWE.
Oh, yeah, he did say that.
I wonder if he's
got like some money on Chuck Palumbo or something.
I don't know. The commentary then asks, Kevin Nash, what does Sean Stasiak need? He needs a 9mm to the temple. I'm like, what the fuck? He needs to be killed. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's got a little intense there, Kevin.
Palumbo hits a head scissors and a drop kick to the brothers. He then goes over to Stasiak, who just drops off the apron, refusing to tag in. Chuck Palumbo then gets H-bombed, and the Harris boys win. Post-match, Kevin Nash goes into the ring to mediate. Stasiak gets in his face, so Nash just chokes him in the corner.
Did you catch his, like, crazy eyes in this moment?
I did.
Oh my God, he looks fucking scary.
See, my thing was, he choked him, but where did he choke him, Emily?
Goozle?
In the corner. Wait, where did the corner? Damn it.
Oh, classic.
We fucked up. We didn't do time to corner.
Damn it.
Chuck Palumbo talks him down, and then, like, he and Stasiak kind of leave together, but also separately, and then Kevin Nash goes over to commentary, and he's like, Stasiak's in for some tough love.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
You just said that you wanted to kill him. How tough is this love,
I don't know, but God, I'm fucking over this.
I don't care.
As a story. Yeah, I don't care.
I don't care.
Like, I don't root for this team, so them breaking up, I'm not invested in.
No, not at all. And, like, Kevin Nash being a coach, that storyline has also never made sense to me.
Well, it makes sense to me because it's Kevin Nash shoot going, what's the least amount of work I can do?
Wow.
Like, that's not a good storyline in wrestling.
No.
We then go backstage. Pamela Paulshock is here with Mike Sanders. I'm curious your take on this because Sanders flirts with Pamela, and in your opinion, was she into it?
I could not tell.
I think she was, but commentary afterwards, like, oh, we have to apologize for Pamela. It's like, she was giving looks like, maybe.
It was the last line that Mike said that I think they were apologizing to Pamela on Mike's behalf.
Yes. Well, Sanders says the cat is good at a lot of things, like talking and dancing, but like, I'm going to kick people's ass. And he's going to put on a 3-round kickboxing session later tonight. And then he tells Pamela, maybe I'll go 3 rounds with you for like 3 or 4 minutes. I'm like, what?
And that's when she kind of winced. So I think she was into it until that, and she's like, oh, okay. And then we cut to commentary, and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry for that, Pamela. I think that was apologizing on Mike's behalf.
But, like, she seemed into it.
At first, yeah. I think she was okay with it. That last line is what made it a little bit more ambiguous.
Yeah, that said, 3 or 4 minutes, there's a Vince Russo joke to be made here. We then get Mean Gene in the ring, bringing out WWE Champion Booker T.
I feel like it's been a minute since we've seen a Mean Gene interview. It's all been Pamela.
Yeah, I guess he didn't come to Australia.
He didn't go to Australia.
Yeah, that does just create a weird distance with some of the, like, stories and, like, personalities and wrestlers. Is that if you weren't on that trip, you've missed, like, 2 full weeks of programming. And if you just happen to not be in the last show, it's like, oh, well, then you missed even longer.
Yeah.
Like, we get a return later that I'm like, yeah, it's not actually been that long.
It does feel like a long time, though. But also, I can't speak for us. I can't speak for it because I have no, like, understanding of time when it comes to this stuff. I can be like, oh, I haven't seen Mean Gene in like a very long time. And you're like, Emily, it's been 3 weeks.
Yeah, it doesn't help that for us, Fall Brawl was in April.
Jesus.
So.
That feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, I mean, we had all the Russo stuff. We had an ECW show. It's just the nature of how we do things.
Yeah. Also, April was just a hell of a month personally for both of us. So it's like, I don't even remember feelings in that month.
But Mean Gene is with Booker. Booker knows he wants to talk about the last 3 months as champion. I'm like, are you just retconning you losing to Kevin Nash and to Vince Russo? Booker says, I do this for the fans. And it's such a nothing white meat promo.
Oh, yeah. I zoned out.
Gene shifts the Halloween Havoc. Booker says he respects Steiner, but as a man, he sucks.
Got him.
Booker says that Steiner will have to kill him to take the title. And both of us appreciated during this promo, Booker T is doing his thing, and Stevie Ray keeps feeling the need to interject, but Booker can't hear him, so Booker just keeps cutting him off.
So Booker is talking about, like, the way he was raised, and he's like, my daddy told me to do this, that, and the other. And on commentary, Stevie's like, yeah, my daddy said...
And I said, don't hate the player.
Yeah, when we were being raised, that's
hate
what...
Hate the game.
It was just constantly trying to be part of it. It was very much like, me too, Booker, me too.
Which is slightly funnier knowing that Mean Gene can hear him and Booker can't.
It was really funny. Oh my God, I just love Stevie Ray getting put in his place.
Scott Steiner then comes out and not my favorite promo of his. He gets a touch racist here about like Ebonics and...
Oh, I missed the racist.
Yeah. Ironically... He's so incoherent, it was hard to hear the racism.
Okay, see, that was the thing. That's what I was focusing on, was he went into, like, full... Like, that,
yeah,
that
was
the
omen of,
was
I can't understand you, because Ebonics, and your mom's a cheap prostitute. And...
Yeah, I got that part. I totally missed the Ebonics thing, because he was just being so Steiner that I was just like, yeah, oh, you, Scott, I bet Nick will put this promo in the podcast.
No.
I wasn't even listening to the content. Damn.
At Halloween Havoc, he's going to beat his ass and knock him out. And commentators like, knock him out. What?
What? We have physical violence in this program? That's crazy.
Booker challenges Steiner for right now, and then they brawl on the ramp. But then Jeff Jarrett just runs out. Sting then makes the save. So then, like, the whole locker room comes out to, like, separate these guys. No, like, actual security, just the locker
just
room?
Just the locker room.
And then we get Mike Awesome just throwing hands at Scott Steiner.
This felt personal. Like, this felt real.
Well, it was meant to set up a match.
Oh, I know. No. But, like, aside from that, this felt like it had some actual heat behind it.
It didn't help that, like, it took, like, 10 people to restrain the others. And then it was, like, Crowbar and Quee. We were like, hey, Mike, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Things kind of start to settle as we go to commercial. And admittedly, this segment should open the show.
Yeah, this probably would have been a better opening segment.
It didn't have great energy, but it had good energy.
It had enough energy.
And it sets up things.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly, like, this is it for Jarrett and Sting tonight.
Oh, this is it for Sting.
Yeah, half the matches on Sunday's card, like, barely get a fucking look in, including that one. I'm like, yeah, it was weird. Like, oh, just nothing else.
Damn.
Like, admittedly, we had a little bit of, like, a package later, but, like, David Flair and Buff Bagwell just aren't on this show. We then go backstage. Pamela Paulshock is with Scott Steiner.
Oh, my God.
He shouts. And he says, Mike Awesome is a lamb come to slaughter. And then, bah.
He bahs at Mike Awesome.
He's the bahst at sex.
Oh, my God. The bahing. I had to back it up for myself. Because I was like, there's no way Scott Steiner just bahed.
Yeah. So we have Awesome versus Steiner later tonight.
Can't say I'm excited for it, but the bahing, that really got me.
Ironically, I was more into the match idea than the actual promo.
Yeah. Scott Steiner's just very Steiner tonight. Like, he's very ramped up to 100.
Let's ramp it down from there, because next up is above average Mike Sanders coming out to the ring wearing some headgear for his kickboxing demonstration.
Mike Sanders might be the worst person on the roster right now. He is just, like, white meat boring.
I would say, I need you to define worst, because...
They're pushing him like he's interesting, and he's just not. He's not a good wrestler. He's not a good promo, and he thinks that he's cooler than he is. He's the fucking worst thing that WCW has going for right now.
Emily, he's above average.
He fucking sucks. And I say that really emphatically because he fucking sucks. Well, as, like, not even just as, like, oh, well, he's a heel. He's supposed to suck. No, he's just bad at everything he does. Like, his skill is bad. He's not just like, ah, oh, I'm just great because I'm the whatever. No, you fucking suck at everything.
I forget who it was a couple weeks ago that just, like, the perfect fucking moniker. What's up, average Mike?
Yeah.
Sanders says he comes from Bad Street, USA.
No, the and, fuck like, you don't.
And the further you go in, the worse it gets. And I live in the last street on the right.
You are from, like, the suburbs of Stanford, Connecticut or something. You are from the whitest of white suburbs. You've never had a single trial in your life.
At Halloween Havoc, Kat will find out what it means to be SOL, and you know what that means.
Does it mean anything other than shit out of luck?
Sanders then brings out his opponents. It's the Young Dragons with Leia Meow that commentary attempts to be like, oh, no, they have actual, like, martial arts background, yeah. And that does not come across in this.
No, he's trying to be like, oh yeah, these are some real fighters here. They'll put up a good fight.
There are definitely some comments made about Lei Miao's boobs during
you know,
the
I didn't
entrance.
Hear them. Yeah. Probably.
It's going to be like one at a time, and Sanders sneakily like... So I thought it was like sprays water or something on his gloves.
Okay, yeah. I could not tell what happened here.
Well, Tony Schiavone's like, that's going to weigh the gloves down. This is so unfair.
That's what I thought he was going for at first. Like, he was making them weapons by making them heavier. And I guess filling them with water makes sense. But he was like, it was a fucking squirt bottle. Like, that wasn't going to fill them with water.
Yeah, the problem is commentary was included into what the fuck was going to happen. Because we find out with him that, okay, he has water on the gloves. They're heavier. Ooh. Jamie San is in first. He's not wearing gloves or headgear.
No.
Jamie gets Sanders in the corner. Sanders, like, rubs his glove in Jamie's face. And it's like, oh, it's burning his eyes. Which, I guess commentary was partially clued in. Because Jamie, like, steps back and Steve Ray's immediately like, what's wrong with his eyes? It's like,
oh,
we haven't even looked at that yet. What are you talking about?
We haven't even thought that it's eyes yet. But at this point, even I was like, okay, it's like oil? Like, you got oil in your eye? That's
probably Tony's like,
sucks.
Oh, it must have been like a alcohol of some sort.
Yeah.
So Sanders hits a little shake, rattle, and roll punches, and then knocks out Jamie. So round one, knockout.
Great.
The crowd pops massive for Nitro Girl's siren coming in between the rounds.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest pop of the night, sadly.
Yang is in next, hits a big right hand. He also gets blinded by whatever liquid is on the gloves and gets knocked out. Like, okay, so then Sanders goes for more, and commentators like, oh my god, I can smell what it is from here.
So what is it?
You fucking can't, you liar.
Is it poison?
Well, next up is Kaz Hayashi, who hits Sanders from behind and like knocks Sanders' headgear off, mm-hmm. hits a big kick. And then they go to from corner to corner, and Sanders rubs Kaz's face in the turnbuckle pad that he was in, and it makes Kaz like knocked out on his feet. And I'm like, is
right.
it fucking ether? Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Which
like, this
they mentioned later, it apparently was meant to be ether.
What is ether?
Just like a noxious gas, kind of.
It's liquid.
Yes, that kind of.
Okay, I missed that they said that. Because yeah. I'm like, if this is just alcohol, that doesn't make sense. That's not how you react to alcohol. Like, Jamie, like, fumbling back because he got alcohol in your eyes. Sure, that tracks. Just immediately getting knocked out, like, off your ass just because of alcohol, that doesn't make any sense. So I was like, this must just be, like, poison.
So Kaz is woozy. Sanders hits a kick and wins. And Lei Miao comes in, low blows Sanders. Tony Schiavone, he didn't sell it. Tony, please, stop. Stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Admittedly, he didn't sell it because he's wearing a cup.
He pulls out, covers in this
ether,
alcohol,
yeah.
ether, whatever.
I'm just going to fucking gas Lei Miao. Like,
yeah.
So Miss,
like, I think he would kill her.
Miss Jones comes out, distracts Mike Sanders, so the cat comes in the back, kicks Sanders, knocking him out. And then does crotch chops, and then he and Miss Jones do the cape dancing bit.
Great.
This was fucking terrible.
This was weird. This didn't make any sense. This was weird and bad and just like,
like, we
what
get
am
it.
I
Sanders is going to cheat on Sunday.
Yeah. But we kind of knew that was going to happen anyway.
Yeah, because he's a heel.
Yeah. Well, not even that, just because he's bad at everything.
Yeah, and you just buried the Young Dragons for like no fucking
reason.
Yeah,
no
here.
Reason.
Like, it was already bad when they were doing the weird music thing with the cat, but now it's,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, when they were having, like, weird little matches in the office.
Remember when it was, like, they might have been in on it together? Like, they were all buddies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was also very strange.
What the fuck are they doing with the other... Have them wrestle matches. Remember when they wrestled 3 count and it was just fucking great? Do that.
I feel like they're treating the Young Dragons the same way they treated, like, the Luchas.
No, they're treating the Young Dragons the way they treat fucking, like, Hornswoggle in WWE, yeah. Where it's, like... Oh, your children. Like, what?
Come look at these freaks. Yeah, no, it comes off as like, we don't know what to do with Asians other than be racist.
That said, I know that match between Mike Sanders and the cat is not good. Shocker, I know.
What? That's crazy.
It's probably going to be some sort of like kickboxing match too.
Oh, yeah, I figured. Because I think that's what they were trying to like set up here. It's like, oh, this is a preview. No, the Young Dragons are way better than this, and they're not being utilized properly, and I think we can all kind of agree on that.
Yeah, well, now there's 3 count. We'll get some of them in our next segment, because first we get Chronic coming out to the ring with microphones,
oh,
and Stevie Ray is very upset that Brian Adams does all the mic time and Brian Clark doesn't get any.
Why? Are you projecting? Is he mad like about his own tag team time where Booker did all the talking?
There is a line from commentary here that I think, I don't think it gets him in immediate trouble, but it gets him in long-term trouble. Mark Madden notes, well, this company is ever sold. Yeah, I'm trying to like highly suggest like keep my job. This is the first mention of a potential sale on television.
Air. Oh.
And I don't think they liked that. I know when he gets fired, they cite that kind of shit. Yeah, Mark Madden does not make it to 2001.
Darn! Bummer! Can't wait to say goodbye to him.
Yeah, it's this shit, and then he has like a actual backstage feud with DDP.
Why does DDP keep getting in fights with people?
I don't know, man.
He's a good guy. If you're going to fight with DDP, you're the problem.
That's why he got fired.
Jesus.
So Bryan Adams has the mic. Their issues with Goldberg were just business, but now they're far more personal.
Ooh, spooky.
Adams says Goldberg can take the money and his career and stick it.
Stick it where?
Well, commentary's like, whoa, oh my God, stick it? What? It's like, guys, that's like very standard verbiage.
It's almost like G-rated.
Brian Clark then grabs the mic. Series like, finally.
Jesus.
And he's like, three count of apparently hired Chronic. He's like, I don't know how they got the money. And I'm like, what? So three count come out and three count note, like, yep, we hired Chronic to basically defend them while they just sing their
as
songs.
Bodyguards, yeah.
For the rest. No, they're like, we're going to hold down the ring and just do our songs for the rest of the show.
They said they came back from a sold out concert and they want to show their songs to the fans. So they're using Chronic as bodyguard so that they can put on their concert in the ring.
But like specifically, they know the rest of the show is going to be us.
Because I would have taken it.
Chronic then go, well, they deliberate first. They go, we're not being paid enough for that. And then they beat down three count and the bell rings. And this is now a match.
Oh, I missed the bell ringing. Oh, my God.
Yeah, because even commentary is like, whoa, the bell rings. This is a match? Who said it's a match? Huh? Who said? I'm like, guys, oh, fucking God. Chill. They hit high times on Shane Helms and win. And I don't get the point of the segment overall, but, like, they bungled the punchline because, like, it could have been a good, funny punchline.
Oh, I didn't
like,
think it was bad. I didn't think they bungled it.
I think it would have been better, is my point. Of, like, the... They drew out the, like, whoa, hold on. You said how long? We're not paid enough. Like,
no, I disagree. I actually think that this is actually fairly well done and kind of charming. This whole thing kind of highlighted what Chronic's whole thing is, because admittedly, it hasn't been that clear. In WCW, it's been alluded to that they're hired for whatever, but it hasn't been made explicitly clear. And this segment made it explicitly clear, and it gave everybody kind of a motive for what they're doing. Like, three count wants to fucking perform because we've never been able to actually see them perform. I kind of wanted to see them do something.
You know what, actually, I think it is? I'm remembering my issue with this. Like, they're literally missing one element of this to have this bit work. They needed to give, like, the money back. They needed to have, like, a 20, hand it back to them and go, never mind, and then beat them up.
Oh, okay, maybe.
Like, that, to me, that makes the joke better. Just,
I don't
like,
know.
The, like,
I don't think this joke fell flat. I think, like, talking about it is ruining it. But, I think this gave 3Count an opportunity to, like, be more characters. Like, they had a funny line that, like, we're not just for, you know, our fans, we for them hoes. Or something. Yeah. I'm like, what? It gave them a little bit of character.
I remember Evan Courageous saying something about that.
We're also for them hoes. Like, no, you're not. What?
No, I think admittedly, Chronic just giving certain dollars back and then beating them up would have worked better than, because Brian Clark and Brian Adams don't have comedic ability.
They should not have been put on microphones. Yeah. You're right. Overall, though, I don't think that this is like a dud.
No, the premise, this is sound. The execution, there's a version of this that is better.
Okay. I was happy to see 3Count, like, be able to show off their personalities a little.
Yeah, like, admittedly, it's hard not to compare all of fucking Chronic's bits to the APA. But, like, there are APA bits where they defend somebody they don't like. And then, whenever that the contract is ended, they take the gloves off. It's like, now we're us. And they beat the shit out of them.
Okay.
It's like, yeah. Every bit Chronic's going to do has been done better by the APA. Yeah, that's the problem. Well. When the problem with the segment is I've watched other wrestling before, it's not a good segment.
That's fair. I liked it. I actually thought this was charming.
Speaking of I've watched wrestling before, are we in TNA? Because Pamela Paulshock's with Kevin Nash. unlike this company, I don't give up on people so easy.
Oh my God, this literally was straight out of TNA.
WWE gave Scott Hall so many fucking chances.
Right? But also the fact that they're allowing Kevin Nash to go out and say this shit. How much is he being fined? Like, we're talking about Madden getting... That's what I'm saying. Yeah. We're talking about Mark Madden absolutely. Getting in trouble for saying that little thing about, oh, if the company sold... But we're allowing Kevin Nash to go out there and shit on the company for firing a guy who very well deserved to be fired. But that's fine?
Yeah.
That's fucked.
And they don't penalize him.
They don't penalize... That's insane. That's insane.
That is the weird issue of having the two prominent companies. Mm-hmm. Is that, like... If they fire Kevin Nash, he's going to a better situation if he goes to WWE.
But at least Mark Madden's thing was, like, kind of funny. This was just sad.
Yeah. Kevin Nash then quotes The Last Temptation of Christ, which I was really ready for a dick joke.
Really?
Because he's like, to quote Willem Dafoe from this, because I think that's the movie where they had to give Willem Dafoe a prosthetic because his dick was actually so big that it was like, this looks wrong. We have to give you something.
Jesus can't be hung. Wait, no, I can't do that because he was like on a crucifix.
I was really ready for Kevin Nash to make a big dick joke and he didn't know it. Wait, what? Who are you?
He's just so upset that his buddy got fired. This apparently is right after Scott Hall got fired because you told me last week in the notes.
Yeah, because he was cleared and then released.
Yeah, that was in the backstage notes of last episode, I think.
But Kevin Nash says Stasiak is going to get a second chance, but he never specifies what the fuck that's actually going to be. I really thought it was going to be him going one-on-one with Nash, but it's not it later. And then Nash flat out says Scott Hall got released last week and the Outsiders, it's not a gimmick.
Oh, yeah. So he kind of like threatens that like the Outsiders are real and we're going to come fuck your shit up and we're going to sneak Scott Hall in anyway. Yeah, it was weird. Again, why is he not getting penalized? This isn't that good. This isn't that charming. It's not bringing in ratings,
obviously.
Because
ownership right now, like, who's actually in charge of WCW?
Great question.
Yeah. Bill Bush, maybe?
But he's speaking poorly about the company.
Yeah.
That's enough for anybody in an executive seat to be, like, fired.
Yeah. The problem is, right now, WCW leadership doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. They don't know how to manage a wrestling show.
But this is the easiest thing.
But again, if they fire him, then he goes to the competition and then...
At least penalize him.
Yeah.
At least give him a fine.
I mean, he was getting fined for showing up late, and then he showed up late, and they went, oh, well, you're fine.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we're not following through on our punishment, so it doesn't actually matter.
No, all that said, in 2025, Kevin Nash just, like, continues to be, I hate the old you, but new you is, like, progressive, and I like you. But
I really kind of love 2025 Kevin Nash.
But it's still the same guy.
But I also, like post-wrestling Kevin Nash, I think I love. Because he's been, like, pretty pro-liberal takes, whatever.
Yeah.
He's just, like, shooting people down on Twitter, and it's fun to watch.
Just fucking eating pasta.
Great guy.
Anyway, let's move on to a segment that I think if you had told either of us this segment on paper beforehand, we would have shit all over it. And actually, both of us enjoyed.
It's charming as hell.
We get the MIA coming out as Team Canada.
I never thought that I would like the wall.
And just for who's who... We get Sergeant Hugh G. Rection as Lance Storm. Lieutenant Loco is Elix Skipper. Sergeant AWOL is Jim Duggan. And Corporal Cajun just kind of seems to be a moose, which he later confirms. And I need to note, when I saw what they were starting to do, I was very scared to look at Chavo. And I was very happy they did not put him in blackface.
Oh my God.
Because I'm like, it's the time.
That's true.
I was he does a questionable promo later, but I'm like, he didn't do the makeup.
He did not do the makeup. You're right. No, this was charming as hell. And honestly, the Wall's impression of Jim Duggan, spot on.
Well, one, I think it's easy that, like, Jim Duggan's easy to do impression of, too. It's fairly likely the Wall grew up watching Jim Duggan. But...
Probably. But also just, like, the physical comedy of the group, like... The Wall was, like, throwing around this 2x4, like, yes. Massive, so, whatever this thing is.
So the promo starts, Rection parodies Lance Storm on the mic, and introduces Wine Time and Jim Jughead. And, yeah, the Wall has a comically large 2x4 that I swear is, like, two 2x4s joined by mounting. And I'm like, you couldn't hit Home Depot and just get a longer 2x4?
Get a piece of wood.
But he's just marching in the background and, like, swinging this thing and...
But every time he swings it, the three other guys, like, duck in time.
Yeah.
It's very Three Stooges. I thought it was very well done.
But yeah, Corporal Cajun just is not explained for the first bit of this promo, and I'm like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing, gang?
So Rexxion, as Storm, notes all the ways that Canada is better, but Corporal Cajun is like, well, not really, because here's how America's better.
Canada's never lost a war, because we've never been in one.
It's like, oh, we never had a sex scandal, because we're all virgins. And then Rexxion and Storm, much like myself.
Yeah. It's stuff like that.
AWOL is Duggan chants USA. They ask him, why don't you chant Canada? Because I can't spell Canada, tough guy. Ho!
He's doing like the tongue thing too. It's really good.
Yeah, Chavo then does Neely Skipper impression. And
it's teetering, but I think that it's more basic thuggonomics than it is racist.
Well, Mark Madden's like, this is offensive, Stevie Ray. No, it's not. I'm like, okay.
I don't know. I think it's just, it's one of those, like, I don't know.
See, the real way to win Stevie Ray over is just do an impression of a woman being stupid. There you go.
There you go.
Because I don't know if we've actually had any women on the show yet, but
Leia Meow.
The yak talk is strong again in this.
The yak talk?
Just Stevie Ray be like, this fucking yak, the worst thing in the world. God. Stevie, calm down, my guy. Corporal Cajun then complains that he doesn't have someone to be, and like, I can't be Major Guns because she's with us. And I'm like, you know what? I would have appreciated the attempt. But also, I want to see what someone doing a Major Guns impression looks like, because it would just be, no, stop.
No, all it would have been is he would have come out with, with boobs. Maybe a blonde wig.
He's like, yeah, I'm just being a moose.
And I kind of loved him as a moose. Oh, so yeah, I also want to note, Corporal Cajun is the moose. Commentary's not calling him Corporal Cajun. They're calling him Lash LaRue. Oh, yeah. They're going back to, his name is Lash LaRue.
Huge erection, then takes the wig off and actually cuts like a good fiery babyface promo for like, this Sunday I'm going to beat you in like for America and all that. Actually a pretty good promo.
This as a whole was a really good segment.
Yeah. Team Canada doesn't come out. No. Like another weird build of like, oh, just that's it.
It was kind of strange. Like, they could have at least come to the top of the ramp and, like, loomed or something.
Yeah, because they take off all the Canada garb to reveal the MIA shirts, which admittedly, half of them are wearing half see-through shirts so I could see it underneath beforehand. But, yeah, they just pose and that's it. Like, Team Canada's not here tonight.
It's weird. Still a great promo. Like, still a great segment. Yeah, I very much enjoyed it.
It was a fun little bit of thing. Wasn't substantial. Like, I get why this isn't remembered as one of the big, a classic.
It lasted as long as it needed to. It did not overstay its welcome. It was funny. It was charming. And it put over a team.
And you actually liked the wall in it, so.
It did a great job. My standards are not that high, guys. Yeah. I just want it to be good. That's all.
Well.
And that's it. This is good. That's enough.
I would say none of that in our next segment. We get Pamela Paul Shock with Mike Awesome. And Awesome implies that he and Pamela slept together all day.
Yeah, talk about people who should not have microphones.
And he's like, well, Steiner's easy to tick off. And I'm not a lamb. And it's a warm up for next week. Bleh. And like sticks his tongue out. And I'm like,
cool. Good job.
The delivery wasn't good. And the tongue made it even sadder.
Mike, go back. Can we let Crowbar do all the talking? If y'all are going to be a team, let Crowbar be the face.
His promo is not much better in a bit.
But he's better. He's just better to look at. He's more fun.
We then go back out to the ring. The Natural Born Thrillers and Kevin Nash come out. Kevin Nash starts his promo talking about Scott Hall. It's like, we exemplify what a team should be. Both shoot and work. The exact phrase he uses. Yes. Like, really?
Yep.
Nash says tonight, Stasiak stands alone and in whatever challenge he's going to have. And we hear Goldberg's music hitting, which really know that we've talked enough about Goldberg's placement right now. He keeps getting used as like a heel pawn.
He's getting used the way that he was getting used when we first started watching the show.
I disagree. I think he was a bigger deal then. He feels like he did in the middle, like early days of the streak, but I'm like, biggest star should not be like, this is the comeuppance for Sean Stasiak.
No,
like,
I agree. He's should being
be
utilized
advertised well. Throughout the fucking night.
Yeah, no, like, you're right.
Like the first week where they were like, he's going to face Meng. Meng's a killer. It's great. Like, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Last week it was like, Mike Sanders has a surprise for David Flair. I'm like, why does this keep getting used to the heel's advantage almost?
Yeah, he's
like,
being used as a heel pawn.
He's so nothing. And like, that's such the wrong position for him.
It's strange. It's definitely strange. I liken it to us first using him or first seeing him as like, yeah, he was a big deal, but he was a big deal as like this killer. Like if you get put against Goldberg, you're gonna fucking die. And that's all he was. But, like, all he was a machine.
He's bigger than that.
Now he is. Yes, absolutely. But back then he was just like, this guy is a machine. And then they're like recreating that now almost. This guy's a machine. If you get put up against him, you're done.
You know, I actually wonder a little bit how much of this doesn't work because Bobby Heenan's not on commentary. Because I don't think anyone put over Goldberg more than Bobby Heenan. Mm. He was like always, he made a lot of Goldberg moments feel a little bit bigger because of his ability to do commentary.
That's probably fair.
And when you have Mark Madden and fucking Stevie Ray, you're not going to get that.
They're not really selling it. Well, Bobby Heenan.
Hot take. Bobby Heenan is better than Mark Madden and Stevie Ray.
I mean, in the same vein, Bobby Heenan was also really instrumental in putting over like Andre the Giant. Like, he was kind of Andre's mouthpiece to make him as like,
well. He was his actual manager back then. That's a little different.
But like, he was still hyping up Andre the way that he was kind of hyping up Goldberg.
He has the credibility, I think, is kind of what your point boils down to.
He's good at making guys that might otherwise not be as impressive look really great.
But our match is Sean Stasiak versus Goldberg. And Mark Madden notes, like, yeah, Mike Sanders okayed this match. So why is Stasiak still in the fucking Thrillers?
The Thrillers doesn't make any sense.
You know, admittedly, I'm realizing I did not look to see if someone was here this week because Reno didn't make the flight to Australia. I did not
check.
He's
also not here. I didn't see him.
I didn't look for him.
Well, the Thrillers don't all really come out as like a big group at any point.
They came out here.
Do they?
Yeah, it was so brief that it wasn't noted. But
okay, then maybe.
I mean, Johnny the Bull is probably not here because, you know, torn leg muscles.
Oh, I thought he tore his urethra again.
No, he broke his ankle last week with Quigley. Stasiak attacks Goldberg, getting the ring. Goldberg shrugs off a back elbow, hits a massive spear and a jackhammer, and he's now 12-0.
Yay.
And commentary doubles down.
Wait, 12?
Yes, because he was 11-0 going into the show.
I thought he was 10-0 coming out of Thunder.
Sorry, I did say 10-0. It was going into Thunder. He won a match on Thunder.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
The math actually checks out here.
Fake math. I know. The fake math adds up.
Well, the fake math continues because like he needs at 177. One, does he need to tie or beat it? Either way, the record is 173, but
semantics.
Spoilers, he's not going to get there.
What was the timeline for this?
He has to win 170-something matches in a row, and if he does, he gets a title shot. If he loses one, he's fired.
There's no timeline on it, though? It's not like 170-some before Halloween Havoc?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. He's not. Spoiler, non-spoilers. He's not going to get there, folks. Goldberg then grabs a mic and basically just says, in 6 days, Chronic is next.
Cool.
Not a lot of build for that match either. Like, so many matches. Like, yeah, it's happening.
Yeah, why is that the main event of Halloween Havoc? That's, oh my god.
We then get the Boogie Knights coming out to the ring. Tony Schiavone notes on Sunday, there's now a new match. It's a three-way tag dance of the Boogie Knights versus the Filthy Animals versus Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare for the tag team titles.
Did Disco have the duck with him in this segment?
I don't think he did.
Okay, I didn't think so either.
Disco notes that he teased a massive announcement. This is such a flat joke.
This is stupid. That's literally my note. This is stupid. So apparently he teased this huge announcement that they would announce this thing tonight. And the announcement is, we need to find out who let the dogs out.
And where they're at. Because he also starts by doing a little bit of like a Conan thing. So I think he's just trying to parody Conan.
I really don't know what he's going for. But the whole big announcement is, we are going to find out tonight who let the dogs out.
And where they're at. That's the thing. Like, the one thing, I'm like, cool, you're making the Baja Men joke. But then you tie it back into the Conan and the joke gets too muddled. I don't know. Yeah, he also just continues to do unfunny promo. Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare come out, and Tony informs us that, like, all right, the next match is a three-way dance with one member from each team. And I'm like, okay.
Who Let the Dogs Out also came out in July of this year. So you're already behind by, like, 4 months.
It's more timely than a lot of references.
I guess. But it's a very summer song, and it's Halloween, brother.
But our match is Billy Kidman versus Alex Wright versus Mark Jindrak. And I'm like, okay, this could be good. Jindrak gets double teamed to start until Alex Wright clotheslines Billy Kidman. And then Jindrak's like, you want to double team him? Alex Wright's like, sure.
All right.
And they double team Kidman.
I was honestly just so happy to see Billy Kidman come out with Rey Mysterio. I didn't even care what this match was. I was like, my boys are back together. We're getting the band back together.
I do have some faith for this match on Sunday.
Yeah.
I have no reason to be like, everybody can work enough to where it'll be fine.
Yeah. No, I was just very giddy.
Kidman hits his pop-up dropkick in a head scissor attempt, but it's turned into a side slam. Alex Wright hits a German suplex to Jindrak. Kidman goes up top for a top rope Frankensteiner, but Mark Jindrak stops him and manages to hit a torture rack neckbreaker. Alex Wright hits a missile dropkick on Jindrak, and then all the partners just get involved.
Yeah, it just turns into chaos.
Jindrak and O'Hare do their spot of like hip-tossing Kidman from the floor back into the ring.
I thought that was really cool. Yeah. They like vaulted that guy.
Alex Wright clotheslines Mark Jindrak to the floor, and Kidman hits a Kid Crusher, aka the Unprettier, on Alex Wright and wins. Like, ooh. Oh, kind of quick.
I mean, I was okay with it.
Yeah, it's kind of a flat finish, but then everyone just sloppily brawls. The epitome of this is Rey Mysterio getting in the ring, seeing Kidman getting stomped and going, I'm going to go fight with Disco.
Yeah, well.
Everyone brawls, kind of, and then Rey and Kidman end up standing tall in the ring.
Yay!
And like before they even go to commercial, they're like, Alex Wright's headed back to the ring. Nope.
And commercial.
One, two, he got. No, he did not. Yeah, too quick. I think this could have been a good match.
This could have been, but I think it'll be good on Sunday.
Yeah, they gave it like 90 seconds, it felt like.
Yeah, it was really short. But it gave me my boy Kidman and Rey together. It's a highlight for what's coming. Like, I actually do have faith that this will be one of the contenders for best bit.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
I'm excited.
Let's go backstage again. Pamela Paulshock is with Crowbar.
I love him. I've really turned on this gimmick.
You liked his promo here?
I didn't hate it.
And making dick jokes and hitting on Pamela?
Yeah, well, I would rather him flirt with me than fucking Mike Sanders.
Jimmy Hart seemed
less interested in Crowbar flirting with her than she did Mike Sanders. Yeah, well, how fucking dare you? First of all, Crowbar is wearing the hell out of this outfit. He looks hot. Like, I would allow this man to flirt with me and talk to me any time of day. He looks good. He's charming. He has the, like, charisma. I will allow him to flirt with me.
He's like, got riz.
Mike Sanders can go fuck himself. Get. Crowbar, stay.
Yeah, at the end of this, Pamela is like, the ladies are after him.
Yes. It's me. I'm ladies.
Before that, Jimmy Hart is like, you gotta get to the ring, baby.
Come on, buddy.
And he's like, I have a date in the ring. What the fuck are you talking about, Crowbar?
He's just all about the ladies. He just thinks there's a girl waiting for him in the ring.
Ladies, I'm here.
Hey, ladies.
Commentary then chat about Halloween Havoc, and Tony is just fucking over it with these two.
This commentary group is just
including
terrible.
Like Mark Madden gives him bunny ears, and he's like, I got you there, didn't I? So like they seem to throw to a package talking about Halloween Havoc, or like more specifically Sting and Jeff Jarrett, but instead first we get a bunch of David Flair and Buff Bagwell stuff, and then we go into the big three matches for Halloween Havoc, and it's just like a, hey, buy our pay-per-view, please. I know you're not going to, but maybe?
Maybe? Please? Last try? No? Okay. We do get a flash of the infamous Popemobile.
Yeah.
So we hear Vince Russo's voice.
We see his face too, I mean.
Oh yeah, we do see his face. But I mean, just like we hear, he is featured in the package.
Again, they think he's coming back.
Yeah.
But let's go into our next match. It was a very pleasant surprise. It is Crowbar versus the returning Vampiro.
What? As soon as Vampiro came out, I was like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah, well, Crowbar comes out, commentator's like, we don't know who challenged him. And like, I don't, like, I feel like a weird like mystery that's going to be paid off in 25 seconds.
Yeah.
Vampiro comes out and Stevie Ray calls him a modern day gigolo.
Okay.
I think he means juggalo, but.
Yep, probably.
Vampiro's been gone about a month. I did look into this. Like, it's literally been like 5 weeks.
Okay.
Because he was on the show after Fall Brawl.
Okay. So it's been a lot longer for us.
Yes, but like, he's not been gone that long.
It's probably been about 2 months for us. They say it was 2 months for him.
He also comes out with nunchucks that like, commenters like, what does he have? What are those? And I'm like,
weapons.
Guys. Fuck it. He's using them. Like, what are those?
Oh, yeah. And then commentary, like, yeah. So he starts using these nunchucks in the match. And commentary starts harping on, like, oh, I guess the match is no DQ. Or, like, why aren't they calling him on these weapons? And I can't remember who on commentary is like, well, I guess these rules are a little more lax these days. Yeah, we've established this.
Yes, we know lax that, like, rules. Last episode, they're like, yeah. Hey, they're talking about this. Yeah, Crowbar charges Vampiro early and gets chucked by Vampiro. Vampiro low blows Crowbar, throws him out of ringside, and by far my favorite quote, I'd say of the night, maybe of the whole podcast, from Tony Schiavone. Sometimes suckers gotta know, but suckers don't know.
Yep. I'm gonna get that tattooed on my body.
They trade hard strikes in the ring until a Vampiro mule kick. Crowbar drops Vampiro on the top rope and then chops him to the floor. Quibbar hits a baseball slide and then an apron diving splash. Quibbar tries to like, gouge the eyes of Vampiro pretty violently and then slams his head into a chair. Quibbar hits a front falling suplex onto the ring steps, which just looked rough.
Yeah, oh, it did. It looked quite rough.
Vampiro runs up the steps to knock a chair into Crowbar's face. When they go back in the ring, Vampiro grabs a chair, but Crowbar hits a back suplex and a vaulting splash. And I think it's Stevie Ray on commentary is like, I don't get this. He's using weapons and then also wrestling moves?
Yeah. Huh? Steven.
Vampiro stops Crowbar from going up top and hits a massive belly-to-belly suplex from the top rope. Vampiro then grabs a chair and hits Crowbar in the head. Crowbar gets up twice and then just throws the chair at Vampiro on the second rope. Kind of weird timing there. Vampiro's just like standing around on the second rope. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't really know, but...
Well, then Vampiro hits Crowbar off the second rope the other way and then hits a Van Daminator.
Oh, is that what that move was?
I mean, yeah, it's the toss the chair, kick it into his face. And I get it's the rules, but Vampiro goes for the pin and it's like, no, Crowbar got his foot on the rope. And I'm like, that just feels removed from what we're doing here. I get that is the rule, but like...
Liked it though. It was very smooth.
Just have him kick out. It just felt weird for there to be a rope break in this match.
I liked it.
Crowbar stops Vampiro from going up top, hits a top rope Frankensteiner. Crowbar hits a chair shot to Vampiro and then lays the chair on Vampiro's face and then follows up with his like vaulting leg drop. The two brawl up to DJ Ran's booth that Stevie's like, no, not DJ Ran.
A reminder that DJ Ran is still here.
Yeah, he doesn't even evacuate. He's just throwing looks.
And they're like, commentary's even like, look at the look on DJ Ran's face. Like, he looks so concerned. No, he doesn't.
Vampiro throws Crowbar into one of the dance cages there and immediately bends. Like, he bent the steel.
You mean the plastic?
Then two druids just bring out a table stack.
So I have questions about these druids.
I don't have answers.
Okay. Damn.
I think it's just spooky.
But they I don't know who they're there for. Whose side are they on? Vampiro. Okay. Okay, I could not figure that out. That was not very clear, like, whose side they were on until they, like, fucked with Crowbar. I think it was confusing because of the timing for me, because Crowbar was, like, getting the, like, the offense on it, and then this table appeared. It's, like, his friends helping him get the finale.
Yeah,
because
they bring it out as Crowbar is, like, using one of the cages to, like, choke Vampiro.
Right. So, to me, the druids were bringing the table out to be, like, this is where you slam him, and then you pin him, and then it's done. Here you go. But they weren't his people.
Yeah, the druids like grab the legs of Crowbar and distract him. So Vampiro is able to come back, hits a choke slam to Crowbar through the two tables. Ugh. As Tony Schiavone is like, as only a vampire could do. I'm like, oh, now he's just a vampire.
Wait, okay. Didn't we have that whole match that was like best out of five tables or something? And there were stacked tables.
Okay, that's not my issue here.
No, but you said only as a vampire could.
They just thought I called him a vampire. They've been dancing around that before.
Oh, okay. Well, to me, it was implying that
was also the wall in Shane Douglas.
Yeah, so are you implying that the wall is a vampire because he slammed Shane Douglas through two stacked tables? That's what it means to me.
Well, no. Technically, Shane Douglas would be the vampire because the wall went through the tables.
Oh, okay.
Also,
well,
that was three tables. So,
vampire.
No, vampires should only do two tables.
So what is three tables? A werewolf?
Like, I don't know, man. A franchise.
That's not...
If that's what we're going arguing about, it doesn't matter. yeah, but Tony just calls him a vampire. Charles Robinson just calls for the bell. I took this as Vampiro wins by, like, TKO.
Yeah.
Vampiro then grabs a mic and is like, this is Mike Awesome's fault. And then immediately is like, here's the footage why this is Mike Awesome's fault.
Yeah.
Like, okay, thank you.
He's calling it. He's got receipts.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be Mike Awesome killing the Insane Clown Posse, but it was like, nope, it's footage of him hitting a powerbomb to the floor through a table. Yeah, and
that's it.
And Vampiro challenged him to a match this Sunday, Halloween Havoc.
But doesn't Mike Awesome already have a match on Halloween
Havoc? He actually doesn't.
Oh, I guess I'm thinking of the Steiner match later.
Yeah, it feels like he should, but he doesn't.
Huh.
And Vampiro's big end line, be there or be square.
I feel like a vampire would have a cooler phrase than that.
Bleh.
Yep, there you go. Sorry, my mistake.
Crowbar gets stretchered out at the end of this, but this was a really good fucking match.
This is so good.
Where did this come from?
It's Crowbar.
No, but like they actually like gave it time.
That's true.
I'm like, that's the thing. I'm like, hey, this guy's making his return. the issues we have with Vampiro are usually not about his wrestling. It's about his shit promos and character work and the spooky bullshit.
I like the spooky bullshit. I like the promos. You are the one that has more issue with it. I've always kind of been okay with
Vampiro. You like the Demon Dale Torborg?
That's not the same person.
It's the same spooky bullshit.
I like Vampiro. Whoa. Oh,
what are you,
no.
What are you, Bobby Heenan?
No, that's Mark Madden. It's Vampiro.
No, that was Oklahoma.
Oh, Jesus. It's worse. Well, I'm having a stroke. I've always liked Vampiro's spooky shit.
Yeah, you liked when Christopher Daniels was this hooded mastermind figure backstage? And no, you don't.
Nick, I can't explain to you enough. I don't know who Christopher Daniels is. Stop asking me to identify this man.
We saw him wrestle.
I don't know who he is. No. I like Vampiro's spooky shit. I don't care about Christopher Daniels. I don't care about Del Toro. Vampiro. I don't know who Christopher Daniels is.
All of Vampiro's spooky shit was with these people.
I like Vampiro's portion of it. Christopher Daniels is in WCW?
Briefly,
I need a framed photo of him
again.
In the office if you want me to know who this
man
is.
We didn't see him because there was a hooded figure. Remember, it was basically the higher power for Vampiro that they did for like 2 weeks and they got rid of.
You can't expect me to know that that's Christopher Daniels.
Because we talked about it. And we had the same conversation.
That I don't know who he is?
Yeah. You know what?
Get me a signed photo of him. I'll put it next to Scott Norton and then I'll know who he is.
No, but the fact that they actually gave this match time and like let them go into like this is great. Like this is unironically a really fun match.
Definitely.
Like, the point where I, you know, the weird like did he win by like ref stoppage or what? I was like, well, one guy is clearly standing, so I'm getting the vibe like match is over. I don't even care if they call this a no contest or whatever. Like,
yeah.
But this was a pleasant surprise on this show.
It was. Like we've said, this isn't a bad show.
Well, we go from a very enjoyable match to whatever the fuck our next match is. It is Conan with Tigress versus Shane Douglas with Tori. Conan comes out to what I'm pretty sure is a new theme.
Oh, I haven't said that in a while.
He does his promo, shits on Disco randomly, and calls out Shane Douglas. Shane Douglas then comes out with his arm in a sling, and Tori comes out very sparkly.
My first thought with Shane Douglas in the sling, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? He broke his arm again? We just got him out of the fucking sling.
Well, we'll get into that because Douglas is like, I have an arm injury. I can't wrestle tonight. He also is like, Tori's being medicated because she's so worried about me.
And she like nods along like, yep, sure am. Like, really? Are we proud of this?
And then Conan's like, well, no, she's moving or shaking like that because you're not serving her right. Hey, Tori, I think you need a facial. The crowd doesn't react for the line.
Because it's just weird.
Also, it wasn't delivered like a...
Hey. It wasn't delivered well. It wasn't... it's not a good line. It's also not funny.
Well, this segment is clearly real because Shane Douglas is like, hey, Carlos, I can't wrestle tonight.
Wow, he called him his real name.
So Conan calls him a bitch. Conan says he checked with like the doctor. It was like, yeah, he said your injury's real. But he seemed surprised that there was an injury.
Oh, yeah. I never actually put that together.
Admittedly, I thought this was a bit for a second because he's like, all right, yeah, your injury's real, so I'll see you at Halloween Havoc. And he goes to leave. Douglas goes after him. And Conan, like, half ducks, but then also half sells. So I'm like, is this like going to be a double swerve of like, I know your injury's fake, but I'm going to pretend it's real. So I can duck your attack and then beat you up. But
no, they're not that smart.
Yeah, it's clunky enough for them. But
yeah, well.
Shane Douglas just kind of half hits Conan and they just look at each other like, what are we doing? And Conan then stomps in the arm, locks in an arm submission, but
so
then
the
like releases
doing,
it.
So the fact that we're doing so much arm-based offense makes me think that this is not a real injury.
Yeah, and the fact that it's an actual like match. The bell rings. I'm like, what the fuck?
I think this is fake. But Conan saying that it's real is very confusing.
He wrestles an 8-minute match on Sunday, so I guess he's fine?
Yeah, this must not be real. Because I did buy that this was real and like something happened in Travels or something. Until this portion where they start really working over the arm. I know that we've like danced around people being injured and, you know, wrestling with a knee brace or an arm brace or something. But you don't like go straight for the injured part of the person.
Well, additionally, he puts him in an arm submission and, like, the fiery heel, Shane Douglas, doesn't tap out.
Right.
I'm like, what?
That's the other thing. Like, if it's actually a broken arm, you tap out immediately.
Conan hits his rolling clothesline, keeps going after the arm. Tori then gives Shane Douglas a chain and distracts the ref, so Shane Douglas can hit a few chain shots, and then hits a franchiser and gets the win. So Shane Douglas with one arm beat Konnan.
What a burial.
Tigress and Tori brawl, so Douglas comes out to like stop it. The other filthy animals run out, and everyone just stares at each other. And yeah, I'm like, so one, is Shane Douglas actually hurt? And either way, Konnan just got beat by a one-armed man.
Yeah.
Like, yes, he cheated, but like barely more than any other match.
Right, yeah.
I don't have faith for this mixed tag on a...
God, no. This was dumb. I'm good. I don't want to see any more of this. This is one of those matches that if we were still able to fast forward through, I would...
Yeah, I think Shane Douglas has really earned himself skip. He is very much WCW test.
Oh, God.
Of, you're not getting pushed, big man. I don't care what you say.
Yeah, no.
But that brings us to our main event. It is Mike Awesome versus Scott Steiner. And as Scott Steiner comes out, they're like, well, you know, we want to wish the family of Yokozuna well. You know, he passed away in
England.
He was
from a great family. Like, yeah. He was
they're
so... Just,
they're doing all this reference and...
Whoa!
Yeah, there is a large distraction on the screen.
Mark Madden literally goes, oh yeah, Yokozuna was from a really good family. Whoa!
So, Emily, who is Scott Steiner's special friend with him out
they're
here tonight?
Fucking Tiger! Not Tigress, Tiger!
He has...
Big-ass Tiger on the stage.
A Tiger who does not want to be here.
No, he's got a Tiger with two handlers that... And this Tiger goes into, like, full dog mode that does not want to keep going on the walk. He just, like, four paws down, leans
well, yeah,
back,
Scott
like,
Steiner's
nope.
Scott entrance is a bunch of flashing lights and a siren.
Yeah, so this Tiger's like, I want nothing to do with this. I would like to leave. And they end up getting it to keep going. And oh my god, when, like, Scott brings it down the aisleway, he gives it some head scritches. Like, he's a cool little kitty.
And the woman who takes it over is just wearing, like, a big sweater with a tiger face printed on it.
It's like, yeah, I'm the Tiger team.
But yeah, Scott Steiner comes out with a fucking Tiger.
And, like, we're hyping this up more than I think that it really was on the show.
No, and I think that's part of the thing, is that a lot of people know that Scott Steiner comes out with a Tiger at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people realize it is unprompted and unwarranted for a random Nitro main event against Mike Awesome with nothing on the line.
Yep.
This is not a gimmick. It's not like a, like, why the fuck is there a tiger here?
Why is there a tiger? But it's also, it's not really played into very much. It's just like, I walk this tiger out, the tiger goes away. There's no posing with the tiger. There's no like, look at my, well, look how fucking powerful I am. I got a tiger. Like, it's just like, it's so shrugged off so quickly that it didn't make, it felt very out of place because of that.
Well, I wonder if some of that is because, during the commercial break, when Shane Douglas and the Filthy Animals went to the back, Rey Mysterio kind of went over like, hey, like, it, like, you know, I guess wanted to pet the tiger. The tiger did, like, you know, a little, like, head
little
movement
lurch,
or lunge,
yeah.
And it was like, apparently Rey jumped, like, 20 feet back.
Oh.
He almost got.
Oh, no. But Scott Steiner giving this this tiger head scritches. Yeah.
Like, if cat no friend, why yours?
You good boy.
But yeah, just, fucking tiger, sure.
Fuck it.
Frankly, I feel like they should have saved that for Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
I mean, one, they're going to be in Vegas and like Siegfried and Roy or whatever.
Yeah.
They still don't show then. When does the tiger get one of them? I forget when.
Oh, I don't know. But like Cirque du Soleil, you know. it's way more timely in a right place.
Think tigers are doing acrobatics, but.
No, I'm just saying like circus vibes. Like it makes more sense for a tiger to be in Las Vegas than Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah. I mean, admittedly, not our first tiger appearance on the show.
What?
Or not necessarily this show, but like on the podcast. I can't believe you forgot Lee Marshall, the voice of Tony the Tiger, appeared on some of the early episodes.
It's not a tiger. It's a cartoon!
He's
and we didn't even see the cartoon. This is our first tiger. There wasn't even the cartoon. You can't.
We spliced it in.
No.
Scott Steiner grabs a mic and he's like, I'm going to beat a Booker T. I was sad. I wanted to do a Best of Sex promo. He did not cut it here.
Well, I think he was a little rattled by the fucking tiger.
Booker T comes out after Mike Awesome and Awesome attacks Steiner, who goes to attack Booker. Awesome hits a vaulting splash on Steiner as Booker T joins commentary. Stevie Ray is immediately like, see that fucking tiger? Booker's like, yeah, he's trying to throw me off my game. I'm like, yeah.
Jesus.
Awesome hits a diving splash, but then he gets tripped up by Madeja. Saturn hits an atomic drop, and then Medeja just comes in the ring and hits a kick to Mike Awesome that sends him over the top rope. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh my god.
Saturn hits a chair shot on the outside, and then back inside hits his flexing elbow. He follows it up with a T-bone suplex and then push-ups and spits at Booker at commentary. Steiner hits hard chops in the corner, which seems to, like, hype up Mike Awesome, but they don't do anything with that. And Steiner hits a belly-to-belly. Awesome hits a clothesline on the floor and then goes up top for a diving clothesline back in the ring. Awesome hits a German suplex and then wants an awesome bomb from the corner, but Medeja grabs his foot and the referee goes, like, all the way down to the mat to stop her, which allows Scott Steiner to pick up a pipe from somewhere.
Sure.
Hit Mike Awesome, and then he hits a delayed top rope angle slam, but Awesome kicks out. Steiner then locks in the Steiner recliner and wins with like 8 seconds left in the broadcast.
Jesus.
Like, I don't know if there was more match planned, but they went, no, we gotta go.
Yeah, like, it was very old days at WCW. Like, oh, we gotta go, that's it, folks, bye.
Emily, I feel like you could have had him win with the big angle slam. Like, put that over as like a winning move.
Yeah, that could have been something.
People just keep kicking out of that. But
this match was just kind of nothing in that sense.
It wasn't the worst, but yeah, it was very. It was a very neutral match of like
a fucking tiger opened this match.
Yeah,
that was not the match for the tiger.
It says something that like we're like kind of unfazed by the tiger.
The tiger deserved
like,
better.
It's just a lawless land we're living in. But no, good job putting over Scott Steiner going into Sunday, but you do have Mike Awesome make a title match the next night, and I don't have any faith that he will win that match.
Right.
I hate to pitch it, like, do a messy, fucked finish, but this would have been the case for, like, everyone standing tall or getting separated.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah,
but,
well.
But this show as a whole was not a bad Nitro, but
it was
a bad go-home for Halloween
yes.
Havoc.
It was a breath of fresh air from the last two episodes of Nitro that we watched that doesn't make it a good show. I don't leave this show being excited for Halloween Havoc. I don't feel like watching this makes me want to go buy the pay-per-view. Like, in that sense, it was not an effective show.
Halloween Havoc is an 11-match card.
Oh, my God.
And 7 of the matches were either announced today or at least one member of the match did not appear on this show.
Cool.
Yeah, like, this, no wonder this is a fucking shit buy rate for the next show. But
yeah.
I'm seeing a couple matches that I'm like, oh, they didn't announce that. Like, I didn't know Reno was facing the wall on Sunday.
Oh, so Reno is still here?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
He's the hardcore champion.
Wow, I have not thought about the hardcore title in a minute.
But yeah, I can't say I did any sort of positive vibes about Halloween Havoc.
No.
But that's next episode. I think we'll have plenty to talk about then. Any closing thoughts before we get into best bit, worst bit, and MVP?
No, I think that we can just jump right in.
Do you feel a little better about this show than the last couple?
Yes. I mean, it's a low bar, but yes, I do feel better.
But yeah, let's go into best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, what is your best bit?
This might be controversial. I gave my best bit to MIA as Team Canada.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was really funny. I thought it did a lot of character work for MIA. It was charming. I very much enjoyed it.
I'm surprised because I thought you were going to mirror me. I'm going with Crowbar versus Vampiro.
He comes up later.
Emily, what is your worst bit?
Honorable mention, the tiger. Like, I love the tiger as an idea, but the way that it was handled, the way that it was presented, nah, bad. But my worst bit is Kevin Nash talking about fucking Scott Hall again. I'm over it. I'm tired of it. It needs to be done. Shut up.
It's not going
to
be done.
I know it's not. And that's why I need to keep bringing this up to be like, I'm fucking sick of this.
The
know
fact that
I'm
he can
sick
do
of
it with like impunity. And,
right. Yeah. That's what makes it the worst.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with the Mike Sanders kickboxing.
That's
open.
Fair.
Yeah. Young Dragon segment.
Stupid.
It was just shit and confusing.
See,
and
yes, I agree. But that's the other thing about Mike Sanders. Not only is he bad at everything he does, he's forgettable. I forgot that he was even on this show, and we have only talked about him for like an hour.
And then, Emily, who is your MVP?
I didn't give him best bit, but my MVP is Crowbar. He is the best bit of my heart.
I think I have to agree with you just because like, there's not really any standouts.
No, but that match in itself was a standout.
Yeah, with a show that's a lot of like middle-of-the-road stuff, definitely Crowbar brought something else, and you know, the ladies love them.
Ladies love them.
But that's going to do it for this episode of the Butt Seats Podcast. Next up, Halloween Havoc 2000.
Woo!
The final Halloween Havoc until NXT revives it, but that doesn't count.
That does not count.
Well, if you're curious to see how time has progressed over the course of the podcast, we have two previous Halloween Havoc episodes.
We sure have.
And I guess 130-something other episodes. Everywhere podcasts are found, basically, except for SoundCloud. You can also follow us on social media at ButtsInThePod. We're posting less and less over there, but want to get notified when episodes go up and don't have anything else.
It's usually exactly, yeah. We post when our episodes go. If we're not really utilizing X for much, we're not really using Blue Sky for much. It's just...
social media is a hellscape.
That.
What's not a hellscape, though, is our Patreon.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun over there.
Patreon.com/ButtsInTheSeats. $5 a month gets you... God, it's so many things now.
Oh, it's a whole bunch of TV shows that we've reviewed, a whole run of TNA, which we just recently concluded, a couple of one-off spin-offs, like we just did the Lex Express. We got a lot going on over there. It's really just a hodgepodge of whatever floats our boat that week.
Yeah, and we also have Eric Bischoff's book report, and upcoming we're going to have Vince Russo's book report, so
woo!
Definitely living the glory days of WCW, And if that's not glory days enough, we just announced that we're going to be doing the peak of WCW, the origins of the NWO. We're going to do from Bash at the Beach 96 up to Starrcade 97. So that's going to be a nice long journey for us.
Yes, we are going back in time to remember what it was like to enjoy this show.
Emily, once again, any final thoughts before we get on out of here and head towards Halloween Havoc?
No, let's start riding that spooky train.
Ooh, it's going to be a mash.
Could be a monster mash.
Oh no. Well, until we mash at Halloween Havoc, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts and Seats Podcast.
Bye.